But the field goal is missed. It goes over to the Chicago Bears, and we continue. A 35-yard attempt by Chester Marco with David Beverly holding. It's blocked. Taken by Marco. Chester Marco. Chester Marco. Chester Marco takes it in.
Can you believe it?
From Chester Marco. And the Green Bay Packers have won the football game.
Can't believe it.
What a touchdown run. A touchdown run. 25 yards for Chester Marco.
Perry in motion. The pass to Perry. Touchdown. High fives from Walter Payton for William Perry, who's now a pass receiver.
Unbelievable. He goes in motion. They figured he's going to turn up for a block. He just takes off and completely fooled the Green Bay Packers. And the key to William Perry was hang on to that ball, and they didn't even spike it. William Perry scores his second touchdown, his first as a pass receiver. Cumbie, 52, is chasing him over there, but he gets caught up in the action there. And Perry, and the thing you lose sight of, is that he's very quick for such a big man for the first 5 or 10 yards in his quickness.
Okay, so this is a remember this crap. I guess that's what we're going to call them. So when the Bears play teams in their own division, last year Mike Donahue and I did two remember this craps for each of those teams, the Packers, Lions, and Vikings. And so instead of doing two new ones this year, we're pulling some of the best clips from the ones we did last year, at least the first go around. And so I was going through this. This is the first one we did last year. It was right around Thanksgiving because the Bears and Packers didn't play until late. And I was just going to pull a couple of things out of it. But honestly, there's a lot of really good stuff in here. So you don't get the whole episode, but you get quite a bit of it. If you missed it last year, then you have to listen to this. It's required listening because there's really good stuff about the history of the Bears Packers through the decades and who was good and who was bad. The Ditka years when the Bears dominated, we talk about Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. But the best stuff is stuff about Chester Marco, not just the Chester Marco game, which if you're not familiar with, you just heard one of the highlights. The only highlight from that game. But then we found some pretty dark stuff about Chester after that. If you remember who Mossy Cade was, I kind of explained to you why his nickname was the Anteater. It's just as disgusting as you might think. We talk about James Lofton. We talk about Mark Chimura and his hot tub. And we talk about Najee Davenport in the closet. Also probably not doing what you thought that he did. So there's just a lot of good stuff. And then it ends with a really, I think, a really funny George Halas, Vince Lombardi story. So if you haven't heard it, you have to listen to it. If you did hear it last year, you probably will enjoy it again. So here it is. Remember this crap. Bears Packers. Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember this crap with Mike Donahue, and this is the one everyone has been waiting for because it's Packer Week. We get to remember the Bears and the Packers. And kids, I know it might not seem like it, but it hasn't always been bad between the Bears and the Packers. So, Mike, how are you doing?
Not always. It has not always been bad. That's a very valid point.
When we were youth, I'm doing well. The Packers never beat the Bears.
Yeah.
We thought it was always going to be like that.
They were of no consequence. Even when the Bears were of no consequence, so they were mutually inconsequential, I guess. But there was a time, all for all you youngsters, gather around, where what we've sort of been accustomed to for the last quarter century was at least in about an 8 to 10 year window, almost a solid 10 year window, where at least the Bears had complete dominion over the Packers. But I guess the larger picture too is that really there's about a 20 year window, or you know, closer to 15, where they were perennially, it was like this weird team with this mustard yellow pants that they weren't even from Milwaukee. They're from some other place up there called, you know, I mean, these are all my impressions in 1979, 1980, when they were truly at their historic nadir, 10 years removed from the Lombardi area and 12 years before Favre. And even when the Bears were bad, they were just, I didn't even hate them back then because they weren't even worth the time. And that's a fact.
I mean, everything about the Packers is dumb. The shitty little town they play in. You know, every other NFL team moved to a real city, except for them. Those awful uniforms. The green, and it's not gold, it's yellow. That is yellow, and it's awful. They're stupid.
My high school colors.
They're named after packing meat in paper. Jesus Christ, that's not a nickname. It's just a verb. It's awful. It's everything about them is stupid.
What should we name the team? God, looks over his shoulder. Bunch of warehouse full of guys packing boxes. I'll call them the Packers. Yeah, I mean, you're right about the color. Green and gold is that's a different thing. My high school, Elkhart High School, green and gold, proud of those colors. I mean, there's something a little pronounced about that. Though that is not even green and gold.
No, gold is fine. Yellow is not.
Right.
Viking yellow is dumb, and the Packer yellow is dumb. You know, if nothing else, the Bears have much cooler uniforms. And always have. That. But you're right. There was a 15-year period from 1978 through 1993 where the Bears were 23-8 against the Packers. And then going back farther than that, in the good old days, for the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, the Bears had a winning record against the Packers every decade, and it was by a lot in two of those. From the 40s and 50s, they were 39-2 against the Packers. Then the 60s, the Packers woke up, you know, and they were 15-5, so that's not great.
No. But then they went right. The Packers had, before Lombardi, but after Curly Lambeau, they had about a 15-year stretch of irrelevance. They made the title game in 44 and then didn't make it back for 16 years, which in a, you know, an eight-team league is normally hard to do. So, but then right after the Lombardi era, which was, you know, with all due respect, up there is, you know, was it five championships in 7 years? As soon as that ended, it was another 20 years of just wandering the desert. So up until the 90s.
Yeah, the 70s and 80s, Bears had winning records against the Packers. And then since then, it hasn't been great.
Which is really impressive because the Bears were bad in the 70s in the first few years of the 80s. So it just shows you how bad the Packers must have been then.
Yes. And the one decade of competence, relative competence, of the last three is owed exclusively to Lovey. The 2000s. Lovey, in his introductory press conference, knew how to feed the meatheads. What was goal number one? We're going to beat Green Bay. And he always said, Green Bay.
I was so dismayed when I heard that at the time, though, too, right? It's like, no.
Well,
like,
But to Lovey's credit, it was goal one of three. We're going to beat Green Bay. Gonna go back to the playoffs perennially, which they didn't do under him, but they made the playoffs and they did beat
Green Bay. So it was more bottom up, you're saying, than top down. Like he wasn't saying number one is the top goal. Okay.
Lovey's first step was start beating the fucking Packers again.
Which he did. I was thinking about this tonight because I knew we were gonna be talking about the Packers without even looking it up. I was able to just quickly tabulate like the Wonstead specifically. Comes on board in 93, shortly after, 6 out of 7 year run where the Bears swept the Packers. But beginning in 94 and all the way to the end of Wonstead's coaching tenure, the Bears never beat the Packers. So he beat him in 93 once, lost once, and then lost the next eight. He went 1-9, right? I mean, you're probably looking at it, but I know that's a fact. Jaron at least split the first 2 years and then started another streak, and he ended up, I want to say, 2-6, or maybe 2-8, not much better. So, yeah, that's a hell of a run. So Lovey at least put a tourniquet on that annual beating.
Yeah, they had a – from 04 to 08, those 10 games, they were 7-3 against the Packers.
There you go.
Were the Favre Packers. So that was even more fun because Favre had been kicking the shit out of the Bears routinely. So
yeah,
it was nice to see him lose because we hadn't had a lot of that.
There's one game in particular for which I'll really be grateful for Lovey. It was in 05 when the Bears legitimately had a, you know, a good team that emerged. And they had beaten the Packers a couple times, I think, by then. Did they split in 04? I think they did in Lovey's first year, as bad as they were. They may have gotten swept, but I think that he may have beaten him once that year, which itself was a refreshing change because I don't think they'd even beaten him in 4 years at that point.
Yes, in but 04, in 05. Technically in 04, Lovey was undefeated against the Packers because the second game was on January 2nd, 2005.
Oh, nice.
But he beat him in 04, he beat him 21-10.
And that means he went 2-1 against them in 05 because they swept him in the 05 season.
Yes, they did.
But the first, they clinched the division on Christmas Day in Lambeau that year. But that was a few weeks after they were still, that we talked about how fun, you know, when you see teams on the rise, and the 05 Bears definitely fit that description, where they just started collecting, you know, started beating teams around. And they faced the Packers twice in December, I want to say. But the first one was in Soldier Field. It was cold out. And they must have dropped Favre six times. And I'm sure this is back when we had the message board or maybe in the comments of DeCipio. I remember just leaving the comment because I still felt it about how all six sacks of Favre was like unleashed, at least for the fans, let's say, unleashing about a dozen years of absolute frustration. Because up until that point, in what 20 some odd games, he was probably about 19-3, 20-2 for some stretch.
It was humiliating.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been that snuffed out by Rodgers specifically. It just so happened Favre himself has this ridiculous, like 900 winning percentage against them.
So we all remember the first game of the 2006 season. At Lambeau.
Shut out at Lambeau. First time the Packers have been shut out at home on opening day, I believe.
26-0. The scoring got started on a 49-yard touchdown pass from Rex Grossman to Bernard Berrien.
Period.
Then Robbie Gould kicked four field goals just to make us nervous because the Bears were beating the shit out of the Packers, but were not on the scoreboard. And then, as if to announce himself to the world, Devin Hester returned a punt 84 yards. His first of a NFL record, 19 return touchdowns?
I'm glad you reminded me. The very first one was at Lambeau in a drubbing for a team that went to the Super Bowl. That's good. I like that.
So in recent years, things have not been so good for the Bears. Do you know what their record against the Packers in the last 20 games is?
Last 10 seasons, they haven't faced each other this year. So it's basically 2010 to 2019. In 2010, they beat him on Monday night in Chicago. Then you're not counting the playoff game that year, I'm assuming.
I think the playoff game is in there, yeah.
But I'm going to say, you know, they've won a few in there. But if you're talking 20, I'm going to say, so that'd be 21 games, right, or 20 games.
Well, last 20.
Last 20, all right. I won't
overcomplicate.
Although,
let's see.
I'm going to have to say...
The 21st game would have been a win, so I probably should say the last 20. Let's do 21, because it'll seem so much better then.
5-16.
4-17.
Yeah. Okay. We could probably, if we dug down, we could remember each
and
of those.
And three of those are Lovey. And Lovey has coached Tampa and University of Illinois since. Nagy's the only other coach to have thrown a win in there. Wait a minute, no. 2015
is first year of Fox.
That's maybe a John Fox win.
Yeah, that was the Thanksgiving game, right? Yep, there was some weird game where a bad Bears team.
All right,
beat.
So Fox, so one each for Lovey, none for Trestman. Fox.
He got swept. Trestman got swept forward. He did, huh? All right. Okay.
Is that right? Was Trestman 13-14?
13-14. He was 13-14.
Oh, then it's Trestman.
Okay.
So Trestman, Fox, and Nagy. Everybody gets one. That's great.
Everyone gets one. That's in the contract, I think. Okay. Four times in the decade that pretty much concluded. Well, and that's actually probably an improvement.
Trestman's was at Lambeau.
That may, yeah. Well, there is an insignificant, uninteresting Thanksgiving night game where they beat the Packers.
Yeah, this wasn't it. This was November 4th, 2013. Oh,
that was.
But the game. Both teams, it made both teams 5-3.
There was also the Sunday night game where Seneca Wallace found himself in the game after Shea McClellan did the only
right.
memorable thing in a Bears uniform.
Yeah, that's all we have that's all we have to root for is can some slappy hurt Rodgers badly enough? Because we found out that simply putting him out doesn't work. Because if you let him come back, even for the last few minutes, he's screwed.
Right. So twice in that time, in the last, I guess it would be seven seasons. 2013, they They knocked him out in a game and he came back, and then they knocked him out in a season and he came back. Neither of those were 2013. That was nothing related to Rodgers being knocked out. But they knocked him out not for the season, but for a good chunk of the season. And maybe that was. Does time go by that quickly? Was Shea McClellan on the 2013?
Yeah, it had to be because he broke his collarbone.
And so he came back to throw that 50-yard pass on fourth down the same season. That was one of the years that they beat him.
Yeah, so, I think so. Because okay. that's the reason why the Packer record was bad enough that the Bears were ahead of them.
It just doesn't feel that long ago, I guess. The older we get, the quicker it goes. All right.
So the game Nagy won, this was one that I unearthed when I was coming up with the stat about Nagy's record against winning teams. Mm-hmm. And it was so terrible. And I was off by one because I thought that his win over the Packers was against a winning team. But it right. wasn't. It was against, and it wasn't even against Mike McCarthy because he had been already set
That's
home.
Right. Yep.
It was
December
against
2018.
What's his name? The dope who coached the Dolphins, Joe Philbin.
That's right.
And that was a That's game right. that as soon as the Bears won, the Packers told Aaron to go home. They said, all right, you're done.
That's why, because they were like two games left in the season. The Bears won the division with that game.
The Packers were 5-7-1. Yeah, it had a very outside chance of, you know, if they run the table and other right. things happen, they can make the playoffs. So they lose to go to 5-8-1. Bears clinch the division. Packers tell Aaron, see you next year.
Well, I will say there's quality to that one rare chestnut of a game that you unearthed. I was at that game. I mean, we can say this at least, that because Bears playoff appearances have tragically been so few and far between, that the Bears clinched the division and they eliminated the Packers in the same game. So that's a feather in our cap,
yes,
right?
That's all. Yeah, that's all. Nice.
That happened. Knocked them out, and they also ended Rodgers' interception streak in that game when he was absolutely. Couldn't even afford to throw an incomplete pass because it was fourth down out of his own end zone, and the game was on the, you know, it was their last chance, and they finally got the pick, which I called.
That was kind of the football equivalent of Leonis Martin robbing right. Paul DeJong of the home run to eliminate the Cardinals from the playoffs in 2017, in 2017.
I haven't gone over this in my head enough times to have it really hardwired into memory, but I remember down the stretch in that 2017 season that on three successive nights, and I think the Cubs did pull this off, number one, they clinched the playoffs, number two, they clinched the division, and then they swept them, I want to say, and then the third game, they eliminated the Cardinals.
Yeah, and that was
– I might be wrong.
Didn't Hendricks almost throw a no-hitter?
I don't know if that was in the same series. It might have been. I don't – It's funny how less of a grasp I have on the more recent events because it takes a while for them to really get hardwired. But
so another parallel between the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Bears and the Packers, the fact that we hate the Packers and the Cardinals, mm-hmm. is now the Bears and the Packers have met in the playoffs twice.
1941 and 2011, right?
That's right. 1941, they were both 10-1, so they tied for the Western Conference Championship and had to play it off. Bears yep. won 33-14.
It showed a lot of nerve on the Packers, by the way, because that was right in the midst of the Bears, you know, the Bears' golden age, right? The T formation. They beat the Redskins 73-0 the year before. They went on to beat the Giants in 41. Although they got upset by the Redskins in 42, they exacted revenge in 43. They won 3 out of 4, and then for good measure won a championship in 46. And divisional playoff games were rare. So the nerve of the Packers to really try to, you know, be a fly in the ointment back of the 41 season. Nevertheless, the Bears prevailed. So
the other time is a little less fun to remember.
I was there.
That was and I will go to my grave saying the worst thing that Jay Cutler did was when he got hit and tore up his knee, that he didn't do what Brett Favre would have done. Brett Favre would have laid on the grass
for
20 minutes. People would have been worried that he was dead. Then he would have gotten up, and then because Jay tried to play with it. People think that he got hurt and he just went and put the stupid cape on and stood on the sidelines. He tried to play with it. In fact, Olin Krutz has said that standing in the huddle, Jay couldn't hold his leg still because nothing, the ligament on whichever side wasn't holding it anymore, and his leg kept and they were like, ugh, would you knock that off? So he just on the and Troy Aikman and Joe Buck did him no favors, and Fox didn't. All of a sudden, he went from why isn't Jay in? Oh, and then it took him like 20 minutes to unearth a hit where they thought, well, maybe he got hurt and that. And so I always felt like, you know, because Jay.
Well, and they showed him riding the bicycle, and like the narrative went askew. They didn't have like diligent enough like spotting or sideline reporting or. Yeah, it got out of hand, and because
what the hell was Pam Oliver doing down there? No wonder they switched to Aaron Andrews.
Well, yeah, they got, and because of Jay's attitude, and you know, people's inclination toward thinking the worst. It got out of control, and then
it was no fun.
I'm still about that particular game since we're, you know, picking scabs in old wounds. I'll always kind of be haunted. We talked before the Bears where we mentioned, you know, Brady games. They didn't play the Patriots this year when Urlacher had a great career, but he got deked out by Tom Brady in that one season during the year they went to the Super Bowl. Well, in that championship game, there was the play, I remember, where it was still a close game, even though Cutler was out. Defense was the reason they were, you know, they had a good defense. And Urlacher fucking picked off Rodgers and was almost in the clear as he headed towards the sideline to go upfield, and Rodgers somehow managed to bring him down with a throw, basically just threw his body in front of him, but nevertheless, he brought him down. It always kind of haunts me. I mean, Urlacher was a lot older then. I mean, he'd been in the league 10 years, and Rodgers, good athlete, he's a quarterback, but it was in my head. That would have been something we'd be talking about forever, I think, if it had gone the other way.
So I think people, I know I was guilty of this for a while. Faulty memory, think that Caleb Haney is the guy who came in to replace Cutler.
Yep. Started with our good friend Todd Collins.
Yes. Todd went a brisk 0-for-4.
And not to be the typical meatball, I was at that game. I just remember being furious that Lovey wasted that time. You might as well have you already knew what you had in Todd Collins. It's not about, the backup quarterback's the most popular guy in town. Let's go to this heretofore never heard of Caleb Haney. It was like, no, you might as well go to Caleb Haney because you know what this Todd Collins could do. And he absolutely demonstrated it in an absolute waste. Not that the clock was a factor in the end, but it was pointless to even throw Collins out there. I'd forgotten that till you just mentioned it. You're right. Memory can be faulty. They did. There was an intercession there.
So then Caleb came in. He went 13 of 20 for 153 yards.
He wasn't horrible in that game.
Well,
he was horrible the next year.
Yes.
He made a few bad plays, but what do you expect with all that was on the line?
Throwing the interception to the nose guard.
That's a bad look. I'll give you that.
That was bad. B.J. Raji with an 18-yard interception return for a touchdown. Because it was 14. The Bears had scored in the fourth to make it 14-7. Bears get the ball back. Here we go. And then B.J. Raji.
Yeah.
And then a Mason, or then Then Earl Crosby. Bennett. Caleb threw a touchdown pass to Earl Bennett to make it 21-14.
Okay, he's still okay. Yeah, I remember thinking he didn't play poorly, but you know, it's one of those things when you're watching a guy that is, you know, probably overmatched. Like everything has to go perfect.
You know who scored the Bears' rushing touchdown in that game?
It wasn't Matt Forte the way you asked the question.
Right, it was not. It was Chester Taylor.
Oh, yeah, good old Chet Taylor.
Forte, 17 carries for 70 yards. Chet, wow. 3 carries for 2 yards and a touchdown.
Okay.
And was this Edgar or Earl? I think it's Earl.
Earl Bennett, yeah.
Well, the Bears had Edgar, but not that year, right?
Well, and so did the Packers.
Yes, he's most famous as a Packer.
Correct. But the Bears went and signed him, and then he was useless.
Yeah, Earl Bennett ran once for -1. So clearly a great trick play.
Earl Bennett. Of the litany of wide receivers that I've sort of, you know, as we all do as fans, like just sort of end up enumerating throughout the season just for various reasons. This season, Earl Bennett did not come up. And, oh, my God, I totally forgot about goal number 80. Did he go to Tennessee, Earl Bennett?
Oh, no, he went to Vandy with Jay.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
He had that elite Vanderbilt speed. Which is,
I mean, I was like,
because he was a good receiver, he just wasn't terribly fast.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, he wasn't a bad player, and he was pretty productive. But
yeah, I'd completely forgotten about him until
he was
just
their
now.
Best receiver some years, and
that's an indictment.
He's supposed to be like your third or fourth guy, not your first guy.
Right. That's kind of the history of the Chicago Bears. You remember Bobby Engram? Yeah, more than I should.
Okay, so the reason I was going to say that there's a parallel here, because people were like, when the Cubs and Cardinals met in the playoffs in 2015, well, for a long time in baseball, it was impossible for them to meet. But then for quite a while, it was possible, except for the fact that when the Cardinals were good, the Cubs weren't. And then in the few years when the Cubs were good, the Cardinals weren't. So they wouldn't face each other. Well, so the Bears and Packers have met in the playoffs twice. How many times have they made the playoffs in the same year?
Okay, well, that's easy as far as the pre-Super Bowl era, because when they faced each other, that would have been the only time until the 60s. So that's one. The Bears made the playoffs in 77 and 79. As we've already discussed, the Packers are horrible. The Packers somehow made it in 82, but the Bears were bad. Bears made it all the time in the late 80s, and the Packers were bad. And then it's easy to get to this answer, because after the Ditka era, in which the Packers never made the playoffs, the Bears made it in 94, so did the Packers, because I know they beat the Lions. The Bears made it in 01. I'm pretty sure the Packers did, because I think the Rams throttled them in the title game that year. The Bears made the playoffs in 05. And I think they kept the Packers out in 06. I think they kept them out. I think they kept them out both years. So that was a nice little mini golden era between the two. So I'm up to 3. And
now
obviously
you're at 4.
I'm sorry. Okay, so I'm at 4. And then 2010, they faced each other. That's obvious. And then in 2018.
Oh, wait, you were right. I was counting 2010. You were at 3,
okay.
Now you're at 4.
And then that's at 4. So, and it comes down to whether or not the Packers made the playoffs in 2018. And no, they didn't, because that's when they've been knocked out. So, they've only made the playoffs in the same season 4 times.
Four times.
Rather incredible stat.
And they have only won playoff games in the same postseason.
94. Bears beat the Vikings and the Packers beat the Lions. 4 teams from that division made the playoffs in 94.
Yep. That's it. Yikes.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, if you, when you investigate, you'll see the Bears are highly culpable of it, because it's in the,
well, yeah,
the last 30 years in which the odds would be increased of teams. But hey.
Yeah, the Cubs, at least. The Cubs went to the playoffs more times than people thought. That was more coincidence. I mean, the Cardinals were all – they've had some streaks under their Hall of Famer baseball person. They went a lot, and the Cubs were taking a lot of those seasons off. But this one, fault lies pretty much squarely with the Bears.
That's a good point, because you didn't ask me about the Cubs' cards, but, I mean,
how many times have they been in the same season?
Yeah, 07-08. I don't know about the Cardinals, but it's but 15 and 8. No, yeah, 15 and 18. The Cardinals make it. No, were they out 3 years in a row recently? 16, 17, 18, 19. The Cubs didn't make it.
I don't know that I think they only may have made the playoffs in the same year once. And the
15
and the Cubs, you know, have bragging rights forever.
Yeah, so at least once, and unless the Cardinals made it in 07, 08, that's it. So that is quite a parallel.
No, there's no way they made it in 07 because the Cubs were bad.
They knocked them out.
Right.
The Cubs made the playoffs.
Right, they made the playoffs, but with a terrible record, so there's no way a wild card wandered
right.
in from.
And the Cards with the recently acquired Joel Pinero, that was the game where Oleg, Fork, and Slack and I were able to get an HGH chant going throughout all of Wrigley for Rick Ankiel as he got the golden sombrero. They got eliminated that year, and I don't think – 08, though, I think – I don't think they made it either. So that would be just, yeah, no more than twice. So that's a – an interesting parallel, Andy. I'd never considered it before. Thanks for bringing it up.
The Packers have never beaten the Bears on the week that Walter Payton died. We know that. They're 0-1.
Right. Walter's hand came down from the sky.
Brian Robinson. He gets credit for a blocked field goal. He jumped maybe an inch. I mean, I'm glad he blocked it. But that was very much Ryan Longwell hitting him with the ball.
Are you saying that even though you don't believe in ghosts, you're convinced that sweetness sort of gave him a little bit of a nudge? Because yeah, the other thing about that why it felt so cathartic is that was the first win against the Packers in six seasons.
Yeah.
Packers have won 10 times in a row. And that was the first time that you and I had experienced. You know, we talk about where we enter the sports world and the Packers don't matter. You don't know about history. You learn about history later. You don't know about Lombardi. You just know that this team with the Plotchman's mustard pants are just a nuisance and you just want to move on to the next week. And then all of a sudden that team spends a decade or a half a decade just sweeping you.
I had a friend in high school who he was a Packer fan, and he made the lame, if the Packers win, you bring your Packer jersey, I'll wear it to school that day. And if the Bears win, you have to wear the Bears jersey. I never feared ever having to wear the Packer jersey. I never did. I didn't. That was never even it wasn't a concern.
You owned that guy.
No, I had Coach Dicka, and there was no way he was going to let me down. And he didn't. And he loved beating the shit out of the Packers. Loved
he it. Did. Like more than we did, too, because again, one more time, as a kid. Not knowing the history, I didn't even with Charles Martin. Like I didn't like they were of no consequence. I've said it like five times, but I can't stress it enough. Like we were when the Bears became good under Ditka, it was like Redskins, 49ers, Giants, you know, and then maybe the Vikings. We talked about that within the division. The Packers were just like, but Ditka, and in retrospect, it's obvious. You know, he played against Forrest Gregg. It's a lot more obvious to me now than it was. I wasn't even aware of it so much at the time. But yeah, he Ditka really got a red ass over beating the Packers and Forrest Gregg. I mean, yes, their rivals going back 20 years.
He hated Forrest Gregg. Forrest Gregg hated him to the point where I don't remember what year it was, but Ken Stills took out Matt Sui.
85.
Going back to the huddle. The play was so over that the Bears were literally huddling. And still comes flying in and hits Sui.
Rode him over the bench. And then a guy named Mark Lee also totally shoved Peyton upside the bottom of the face mask, too, in the same game. And so, all right, let's start there as far as some Packer humiliation. So you referenced last week in 85, Ditka gets the inspiration from feeling that he got disrespected by Bill Walsh in the NFC title game in 84 when Walsh puts his big fat lineman in the backfield for the last two plays of the game. So Ditka does the same thing to Bill Walsh when the Bears pummel the Niners and Joe Montana in 85. And at the end of the game, hands the ball off to Perry a couple times. And then Ditka, you know, gets plowed and gets a DUI after he flying back to O'Hare that night. And Bears are going to play the Packers the following week. The joke was going right. Coincidentally, and this was unheard of in 1985, but the Bears had to make an announcement that they're cutting off beer sales at halftime, which until 1985, ballparks didn't cut off beer sales ever. You know, games going on, the taps are open. And the punchline was that that Ditka had to, that they're saving the rest of the beer for Ditka. So, but going into that Monday night game, Ditka took this like germ of an idea that sort of came out of a red ass situation or, you know, this indignant, you know, sort of grudge, and he expanded on it because now he's rolling into a game against Forrest Gregg. Now, for those of you that might need a little bit of context, Ditka, Hall of Fame player for the Bears in the 60s. Gregg may have been a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, so they never played against each other at the same side because Gregg was on that great offensive line. I think he was a Hall of Famer. But they had Ditka had a bone in his nose about Gregg, and somehow sort of took that inspiration that Bill Walsh had, you know, first planted, and took it to the next level. And on Monday Night Football, of course, proceeded to hand the ball. Or he used Perry again and the goal line this time in national television, and Peyton scores an easy touchdown as Perry just completely wipes out the Packer linebacker, George Comby. And so it's fun. It's entertaining. We're all watching. I'm 13 years old. You're about the same age. And we're like, you know, Bears are awesome. They're going to win it all that year. Second time they get down to the goal line, there's Perry lineup, and they give him the ball. And he scores. And then, of course, Perry becomes an overnight sensation, right? He's on Letterman within a few weeks, and it's like, you know, the endorsements come piling in. The whole Super Bowl train starts taking off. However, and Ditka did that a few more times, but they go up to Lambeau a few weeks later, and it was actually a close game. This is the game that you're talking about. This is the same game where Packer Leroy Ball, who was it? Not Ball. He was a later era. The guy that pushed Suey over the bench. Ken Stills. Yeah. So it was a chippy game. Stills takes Suey out of bounds and then continues to push, but he goes all the way over the bench behind the players. Peyton, you know, draws a, you know, somebody hits Peyton and gets a personal foul. It's obviously a chippy game. Bears get down to the goal line again. And we were kind of getting accustomed to Fridge being in the backfield, usually blocking, once in a while taking the handoff. And this time, does he go in motion or something? I can't remember now, but they throw a fucking pass to him. The 300-pound lineman, one of only three or four 300-pound linemen in the NFL at the time. And he catches the pass, just another level. So, yeah, in retrospect, it's quite hilarious how creative Mike Ditka got and just trying to just give it to the pass.
Perry in motion.
Pass to Perry.
You got to find that video. You have to put that one out there.
Ryan, Johnny Moore special even.
No, but you have to have the WGN radio call. The Bears were on WGN that year. Wayne Laird and they had Jim Hart and Dick Butkus in the booth. And for years afterward,
doesn't Butkus just start laughing? Like even before?
No, I'll tell you what he does. And this will, if you can find it, this will verify it, because the WGN used this in promos between like 1980. They were kind of lucky, just like the score was when they got the Cubs the first year of the World Series. But in 84, the Bears had been on WBBM for years until the 85 season. Big Joe McConnell and Brad Palmer did the games on 780. They go to GN in 85, and they hire a new crew. Wayne Larrabee comes up from Kansas City, Jim Hart and Butkus. And they had it for the next 5 years, GN Radio. And for about 5 years after that, or at least for a few years, they used in promos, they used this play. They used this touchdown pass from McMahon to Fridge Perry because, you know, just to enforce listening to the games and turning on the TV. But Butkus is like heard going, he's open, he's open. it's like the most enthralling, jubilant
now a pass
scene. If you can find the audio to match that, it's probably preferred, because you're right, it otherwise probably be Johnny Morris.
It's Johnny Morris and Tim
Ryan. And Tim Ryan. They weren't bringing out Madden and Summerall maybe yet for like that game and that time of the season, but I mean, just watch the video. I mean, and 300-pound football players are the norm now. When William Perry was drafted by the Bears, he was there are fewer than 5%. I mean, it's kind of astronomical how quickly that's taken off. So imagine one of the biggest, fattest players in the game going into, you know, the backfield and catching a pass. And that's what Mike Ditka could do to the Packers.
So Bear indignities in Green Bay include the worst instant replay of all time. In fact, a replay call that was so bad, they actually stopped using replay for a couple of years.
They did.
The Don Mikowski was clearly over the line of scrimmage, and they managed to screw that ruling up.
He was over the line. They didn't call. How did they ruled it over the line on review, and they shouldn't have, right? I think that's my memory.
Well, it screwed the Bears. So they must
it
have.
Did. And for years, the Bears in the media guide, when they would
had an asterisk.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, they did not, and it would just say instant replay game at the bottom.
There's nothing better than passive aggressive media guide.
Right. And like, that's an official document. So it's kind of funny to note that, you know, in there. But it was, I mean, it was, and that what, 89 was like the aberration, right? The Bears swept, or the Bears swept the Packers in 85, 86, 87, 88. And then they had that weird season 89 after Dan Hampton got hurt when they got off to a 4-0 start. And then every team in the division exacted revenge on them for the last 5 years. And then for the next couple of years, at least, the Bears got back to sweeping the Packers in 90 and 91. So
can you imagine?
So they struck them 6 out of 8 years.
Can you imagine being 4 games over 500 that early into the season and then not winning another game in the season?
What
would that be like? Oh, that's right. It's happening right now.
Wait, are you specifically making a reference to something Ditka said later in the season, by the way, about not winning another game?
I don't think this team can win another. I'm not sure this team can win another game. He was right.
They did win another game after the 4-0 start. They just didn't win very many.
No, that was when they went to Washington, and he blamed everything on Danelle Wolford.
Yep, who turned out to be a good quarterback.
Yes, turned out to be a very good player for them. One of their few good picks at that point.
Right, in the Jerry Vinicius era. Ditka had sort of jumped the shark by then. And like I said, they came right back the next 2 years. You know, they won the division in 90, 91. But it was by then we were kind of accustomed, kind of like we are with the Cubs right now, to like, I don't know if they're going to do much, even if they get there. So, but they still beat the hell out of the Packers, at least through the 91 season. Swept them 6 out of 7 years.
So there's a game that I should look this up. I don't remember the... I don't think it was this. And when I have two football podcasts, I have a hard time remembering what I've talked to who about. But I remember as a kid, the Bears were beating the shit out of the Packers. 61-7.
I was there.
At Soldier's Field. And as a small lad, I was 1980. It was 80, so I was 7.
It was 1980.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gary Fensick intercepted a pass. And the end zone, he's right in front of the Bears end zone. And I was like, I remember telling him, why don't you just go to that one? He's like, well, can't he just score? His dad was like, well, his kid's a moron, but at least he's starting to figure out where there's certain parts of the field you can score points.
This historic Bears drubbing provided an education, teaching moment for you.
I realize you have to go to the end zone in front of you, not the one that's behind you. You're protecting
You've gone to 1980, and I'm going to come back to this game because that was at the end of the 80 season, and I just started going. I'd become a fan in 79. I started going to games in 79. It was probably the third or fourth game I ever went to, and it was a cathartic game, not to be so dramatic, but with regard to what had happened on the other end of the season at the beginning of the year.
September 7th, 1980. September 7th. A day that will live in infinite.
I mean, and I want everyone to listen closely to how fucked up this is. Pardon my French. This is really in the depths of when both the Bears and Packers were like truly historic bad for their respective franchises. Because the Bears themselves, of course, had a very proud history, you know, 30s and 40s into the 50s, a little bit of a dry spell, then 63, and then a big dry spell. And the Packers, of course, were 15 years removed from Lombardi, but the Bears did make the playoffs in 79. So I was hooked because that was the first year I'm watching them. We watched every game and they, you know, eked into the playoffs and they lost a frustrating game to the Philadelphia. So, but you're optimistic. You're an 8-year-old kid. You're going into the next season and you can't wait for the season to start. And it happens up against that inconsequential team from that place in Green Bay and it's in their town and all right, whatever. Got to get off to the right start. And somehow the Bears couldn't quite vanquish them in regulation. It goes to overtime. And I remember watching this game, one of the earliest memories that I have with I know my dad was in the room because I remember the expression on his face. I'm sure, one or two brothers, sisters were in the room. And we go to overtime, and the Packers get in field position or position to kick the winning field goal. At the time, the Bears had – a fellow that any football fan will recognize, Alan Page, who, once again, when you become a fan at a certain era, you don't know the history, behind you. And so I loved Alan Page and thought he was the greatest and had no idea that I was actually watching a guy that was at the absolute tail end of his career. It didn't matter. He was such a badass that even, at the end of his career, he was, you could tell that the guy was awesome. And he, I want to say, and I could be wrong, maybe it wasn't him, it could have been Jim Osborne, but I'm pretty sure it was Page, gets his hand up and blocks the field goal attempt. And
right now it's in doing so, it's 6-6 in overtime.
6-6 in overtime.
So this is sudden death overtime.
Which pretty much encapsulates both of these franchises in that period, that they go to overtime with a 6-6 game, presumably just four field goals. So the Green Bay kicker, Chester Markle, okay, and if that name sounds funny, you should Google image search Chester Markle, okay? And I'll come back to that in a minute because it still drives me up a wall, up a wall. Goes to kick the, I think it's like a 34, 35-yard game-winning overtime field goal. The kick gets blocked by, I want to say, Ellen Page. Like I said, could have been Jim Osborne. The ball goes directly back into Chester Markle's arms, who just happens to run around left end and has a clearing and runs unmolested into the end zone with the game-winning touchdown. It's even more astonishing to think about, 40 years later. I just remember as a kid, we all kind of jumped up from the couch, I think because the kick was blocked. Mm-hmm. And I just remember like all this thing happens and like people are yelling. And I just remember looking at my dad and he's just staring at the television, like absolutely stunned. And he's just like starts to shake his head. It's the idea that somehow it's not just the fact that a goddamn place kicker scores a touchdown on this fluke bounce. Right. But if you Google image search, Chester Markle, let me just say he is the type of place kicker that other place kickers would stuff into a locker. And yet he manages to walk off with a winning touchdown in the most. So the other thing about this game constantly triggered me in the few years after it happened, because in the early 80s, you probably remember this, Andy, there'd be a commercial presented by Alcoa. Mm-hmm. Alcoa can't wait, was it? Was that their slogan? Or am I screwing that up? But it was the whole promotion. There's a 30-second commercial. It was Alcoa. It was a flashback. And now it's not. It's escaping me what the slogan was.
Well, they used to do the
fantastic
finishes. Yeah, fantastic finishes. They also had You Make the Call. And they,
yep, that was later.
To,
that was
you'd
later.
Have to guess what happened. Yeah.
Right. Alcoa Can't Wait, I think, was the slogan. It was like, Alcoa remembers, something along those lines. They would show like the aforementioned Roger Staubach so-called original Hail Mary to Drew Pearson. I think Dave Casper's Holy Roller, tight end for and former Notre Dame star for the Oakland, John Madden's Oakland Raiders, that won a game when he was, about to be tackled with the clock running out and then sort of rolled the ball forward that ended up being a touchdown and it precipitated an NFL rule that you can't advance a forward fumble on offense, I think, in the last so many minutes of a game. But one that they would invariably show for several years after the opening game in 1980 was Chester Markle with his Coke bottle glasses and his single rim NFL helmet kicking one right into the arms of the Bears front line and then running it in for an end zone. You can tell I'm still struggling with that 40 years later. Yep. Chester Markle.
Alcoa Can't Wait. That was part of the commercial.
That was.
The one I found is Johnny Unitas against the Packers. So not Chester Markle,
injected into my veins. Yes.
Okay, so you so Chester, the unlikely hero of that game. Later on, we find out, well, Chester was Czesław Bolesław Chester Markle. He was born in Poland, moved to Michigan as a lad, went to high school. It says here he didn't really speak English in high school. That's Michigan. That's not a problem. Kicked at Immortal Hillsdale College.
Ooh.
He was the NFC Rookie of the Year in 1972.
For the Chiefs, right? No.
No, for the Packers. Dan Devine drafted him.
That's right. They got in center. Okay. Wow.
He went to two Pro Bowls. He's in the Packer Hall of Fame, made 48 field goals in 1972. Obviously a very good Packer offense if they were kicking 48 fucking field goals.
In a 14-game season.
But he, wow. So when he wrote his book, which I'm sure you read, he admitted that he was on, you talked about his Coke bottle glasses. He was on Coke when he caught the blocked field goal and ran it in for a touchdown.
No shit.
He said he just did. Like he did coke at halftime and felt he could still feel the effects even in overtime.
I don't want to endorse the use of cocaine, but I can't imagine the high he must have had actually finding a goddamn football in his arms that wired and somehow running it in with all these huge men, American football players chasing him.
Now,
wow.
You used an interesting term when you talked about him running in the end zone. You said he was unmolested, right? So that just proves that he was not on the 1985 Packers because they had not one, but two players who both were arrested for molesting women. Mossy Cade
and James Lofton?
Yes. Mossy.
Mossy's was bad, if I remember correctly.
Let's not get into it. Let's just say that my brother's nickname for Mossy for the rest of his life was the Anteater. People can Google that, but don't Google it at work. Here's a happy little coincidence for your franchise. Both Mossy and James. Now James was accused of forcing a woman to perform oral sex on him in a stairwell. He claimed she was into it. Mossy's was, you know,
whole degree
relatively
of magnitude
worse.
All right.
Relative. You look that up.
Right. Just NSFW.
So here's this proud franchise up there in the hinterlands.
Mm-hmm.
In May 1986, two of their players are on trial in separate courtrooms in the same courthouse. James Lofton, Mossy Cade across the hall from each other. James gets acquitted. Mossy does not. James, before the trial, got traded to the Raiders. So he not only won, he got to get the hell out of Green Bay. So it was a win-win for James both ways,
I'd say.
But that doesn't even include Mark Chmura in the hot tub.
That's right. Yep. In the well-to-do suburbs of, wherever. I forget the town. Yeah.
His neighbor's kid was having prom. So Mark invited all the kids over, as one does, to hang out in his hot tub with him.
Right.
And allegedly had sex with one of the teenage girls.
Right. I mean, who can say what you would do if you're living in this house and there's obviously a post-prom party next door? Yeah, like that's invite them into your mammoth pool. I mean, like there's not anything wrong with that optics-wise or anything else. I mean, yeah, Mark.
And then much more. This makes the next one seem oh so innocent. Najee Davenport.
Oh, my favorite.
Former
fullback.
This is my
favorite.
When he was attending the University of Miami, was in a room he wasn't supposed to be in. So he hid in the closet. That's fine. Unfortunately, whatever was going on that he couldn't reveal himself was dragging on for quite a while. And nature called. So Najee.
I'm assuming Najee had eaten Mexican for dinner that night.
Najee took a shit in the hamper in the closet.
Hey, not even the garbage can. Not that that'd make it any better, but in the hamper.
Yep. Attaboy, Najee.
I almost forgot that he played for the Packers. Yep. Now it makes sense. Just to bring back the Chester Markle back to the other game of that season. So carrying that cross all season, I got to go to the game in December and beating the Packers 60, even though I didn't hate them then because they were otherwise inconsequential in spite of that weird flukish victory. They ran up the score on Bart Starr and pounded him 61-7. So that's another feather in our cap, I guess, because it's got to be one of the more historic drubbings in NFL history. So I can tell you that 8-year-old Huey was there.
So the box score for the 12-6 Packer win reveals a, as you would expect, a multitude of ineptitude. Walter Payton rushed the ball 31 times for 65 yards.
Oof.
That's not good. Eddie Lee Ivory led the Packers with 73 yards rushing on 15 carries.
Yeah, number one draft pick out of Georgia Tech. Big bust, as it turned out.
John Skibinski got 5 carries for the Bears.
I vaguely remember John Skibinski.
I don't remember John Skibinski. Bashnagel caught 5 passes. James Scott caught 5 more.
Bashnagel was always good for 5 passes, it seems, in all these games in the early 80s.
Yeah, for 50 yards. But hey.
But you want to see something, you got to go to that 61-7 game, though. Hey, you're going to see some James Scott and some, maybe some Ricky Watts blowing it up. You know, maybe even Peyton's, well, maybe even your guy Roland Harper scored in that game.
I think, didn't Roland Harper rush for probably, well, Peyton set the record at the time, 275 yards. I bet Roland had 274 in that game. Let's see. Here we go. Vince Evans, 18 of 22 for 316 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Wow, that's like Phil Simms in Super Bowl 21. That's quality stuff.
Walter Payton, 22 carries for 130 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Ah, that's more like it.
Roland Harper, 11 for 37 and a touchdown.
Okay.
John Skibinski, 5 more for 20 yards. He was everywhere. Yes, receiving Ricky Watts, 4 for 126 and a touchdown. Bashnagel, 3 for 44 bomb and a touchdown. Robin Earl, 3 for 39 and a touchdown.
Our buddy, the old tight end.
Let's see. Ricky Watts, Walter Payton. They didn't score on defense. Oh, no, they did. Walter Scheid had a 36-yard interception return.
Good old number 23. I haven't thought of Len Walter Scheid in years. How about that?
Yep, interceptions. I was right. Gary Fensick, 1 for 8 Fensick yards. If he'd have just turned to run the other way, he'd have gained much more yards. And Len Walter Scheid,
and the score would have been 61-9.
Those were the only turnovers in the game. You would think in a 61-7 drop.
Yeah. Interesting.
Bob Thomas somehow managed to miss 2 extra points.
Damn, that could have been in a game where the Bears scored 67 points if it wasn't for Bob Thomas, future Illinois Supreme Court Justice Bob Thomas.
Well, 63.
It was 61-7. You said he missed 2, right?
2 extra points.
Oh, he missed 2 extra points?
2 extra points, yes.
So it was just 9 touchdowns. There were no field goals for Thomas?
I believe he kicked right. 1.
He did. So they scored 6.
Touchdown.
How was that? Yep. The Bears scored 9 touchdowns. All touchdowns. Still, poor Bob Thomas. 2. His right leg must have been getting sore.
Yeah, it must have been. Probably missed the last 2 because he was exhausted. Jan Stenerud made an extra point for the Packers.
All right. Multiple references to Jan Stenerud.
Yes, that was an ass kicking. That was
great. Yeah, it was enjoyable. And I was, you know, and considering what happened at the beginning of the year and the Bears season was already over, you can almost blame that game for getting them off on the wrong foot, even though they were probably just bad. Pretty rewarding to experience that in the same season. You know, a coked up Polish born.
Where was Chester? What happened to Chester?
So something happened that year.
Yeah.
Bart Starr got pissed off at him, and I remember there was it was 1980 was the year of Chester Markle. Dude scores a touchdown, and then he ends up falling out of favor. There was something, and it must have maybe probably been his goddamn blow addiction, or I always thought he was a drunk too, but I'm sure that's not isolated to one chemical here.
Markle was cut by head coach Bart Starr on October 8, 1980, following a rough game against the Bengals. Starr said Markle was cut because of poor kickoffs, but Markle felt it was because of his cocaine use.
Oh, yeah. Out in the open. Okay. So just a month after he wins a game for them, what kind of gratitude is that?
So here, this is football in 1980 for you. The Houston Oilers came to Green Bay for a game on December 14th. Late in the week, Oilers kicker Tony Fritsch was injured and was determined unable to play. Markle was still living in Green Bay, so the Oilers claimed him off waivers. He kicked a field goal and made 3 extra points in a 22-3 Houston win. Markle remained with the Oilers for the rest of the season, but did not play again.
In your face, Bart Starr. I'd like to picture Markle looking across the field at Starr after the last field goal and just doing a big sniff of his nose as he walks off the field.
All right, I would not suggest If you're ever offered a drink and they call it the Chester Markle, do not try it.
Okay, so Anteater Chester Markle drink.
On February 14th, 1986, Markle attempted suicide by drinking a mixture of battery acid, rat poison, and vodka. He got to cut it with something, which severely damaged his esophagus. He had his esophagus stretched as treatment.
What year was that?
1986.
Okay.
Still alive, lives in the Upper Peninsula in Dollar Bay, Michigan.
Well, yeah, good thing nobody drinks up there, so he's, I'm sure he's recovering nice and well.
It says he's recovered from his addictions, but has hepatitis C.
It just gets better for Chester.
Life has dealt him some very interesting things.
It's really his high point was like traipsing, even though he probably doesn't remember it because he was so wired.
He's so coked up, he doesn't remember the greatest moment of his professional
traipsing across the goal line to dash 8-year-old Huey's heart.
A couple of other fond memories of the Bears and Packers. Both teams managed to ruin jersey retirements for the others.
Well, I know 1994 with Sayers and Butkus.
That was Halloween, right? It was Halloween, and the wind was raining sideways.
The sleet was coming down sideways. I was not there, fortunately, but I know people that were, and they will say it was probably one of the worst experiences they've ever had. Cold, dark Monday night.
And then wouldn't the John Fox win have been? Wasn't that during the Favre
jersey
retirement?
So that was the significant thing that happened. But it wasn't on Thanksgiving though. You already pointed that out, so I was confused.
Right, it was a Sunday night though, because Al and Chris were in town to watch the Packers pound their rivals and Brett his triumphant return to Green Bay.
And, that's right.
They even propped poor little Bart Starr up against a Kushner. So like wave at Brett. Hey.
Right, even though they had no, he was a Packer, more in his role as a former Packer quarterback, obviously. So wait, what year would that have been? So that was in the Fox era. So it'd be 15, 16, or 17. So the first, okay. I'm glad to sort of try to re-remember that and just kind of instill that into the hard drive because that's a pretty cool moment at least. I'll take the solace and. Because that was not even a good Bears team just to kind of come out of the blue and screw that up.
Oh,
so they retired his jersey at halftime.
Right. This is in the lead for the story. So one very annoying part of this was they brought back a lot of other Packer quarterbacks, not just Bart Starr. Jim McMahon was there with his Packer 9 jersey on.
Really? Yes. Same guy who went to the White House in a Bears jersey in January of 1997. Somehow, I guess they wouldn't let him on the field. Yeah, that's lame. He was a freaking backup.
I'm sure they gave it to him to wear because he showed up, but he didn't have to put it on.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll just chalk it up to the dementia.
So this is the USA Today for the win. Thing. It says here, Rodgers found the perfect way to honor Favre. Late in the fourth, Rodgers looked like he was going to drive his team down the field for a game-winning touchdown with the Bears. Well, it can't be. Game-winning touchdown with the Bears up 17-3. But he honored Favre perfectly. He threw a horrible interception and said... So that's actually kind of funny.
That's good. That is how you would honor Favre. That wasn't a local writer. Right?
No, it was somebody.
The USA Today, you said.
Oh, God, okay. No. You'd get run out of Green Bay if you even joked about such a thing. I thought about Favre earlier this year. Ironically, in the game where Mitch got benched. Because I don't know if you remember when Mitch broke free and went on the 41-yard run against the Falcons. He had an opportunity to do a very Favre thing, which I think would have worked against the Falcons. Now, Favre running down the field, far beyond the line of scrimmage, would
fake a throw.
Would have faked a throw, and the defensive back would have frozen. And I really thought Mitch was going to do it. Of course, Mitch would have pulled back, and the ball would have flown out of his hands.
Or he would have actually thrown.
Yeah, or he would have just thrown an interception.
Which would be nullified because
it's
illegal
forward pass. Sorry.
I actually have to give credit. That's not a bad call. It sounds ridiculous because, hey, I'm way past
the
line.
Right, because you're trying to get the defender to, like, oh, just for a second.
It's instinct on the defender's part to, like, think, oh, he's gonna throw the pass. So,
yeah, the thing I always said about Favre was I hated him. I absolutely hated him. But you knew that if he had been a Bear – he would have been everybody's all-time favorite.
Oh, sure. Player. With all the just back-breaking interceptions.
Right. Even with that, it somehow made him endearing. But he was, you know, he just seemed... And it was as sick as we got of the... And it didn't become clownish until the end of his Packer career when Madden would do that. Look at him having fun running around. Because he was throwing terrible interceptions. He really...
That's right.
His career really did slide. It's as evidenced by Lovey finally starting to beat the Packers. And so when he went, he still was good, but he wasn't great anymore. And he kept threatening to retire, and then he wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so finally they're like, you need to go. We drafted Aaron Rodgers to replace you.
Right.
And he went and he had the bad year with the Jets, and everybody thought, all right, well, he sucks. And then he came back and was great that one season with the Vikings.
It was phenomenal.
Right. Until, as we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He completely botched the NFC Championship game.
Right. As this is
he had custom. A great game until the last, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And over.
Yeah, I actually didn't hate him till the end of his career. Really, he got to be grating. I, in spite of the fact that they were pounding the Bears, like I said, they had previously been inconsequential to me. So, when the Packers actually made the playoffs, I was actually fine. I'm like, hey, that's kind of cute, little brother. You know, I was pulling for him. Like, ugh, dude, what
I was never.
But really, not well because you know you grew up. You grew up more
grew
in
up
Northwest
around
Illinois.
Packers. Yes.
Because, yeah, and I've learned that because I was in DeKalb and, you know, would hang out there even when school wasn't in session and got to know a lot of people around. And even in 90, 91, 92, 93, there are a lot of Packers fans when you get out of the sort of six-county Chicago area. There are a lot more Packers fans around here now, obviously, in the last 20 years. But growing up or in the suburbs of Chicago, I can't recall encountering one. But I understand, you know, when you drift north and northwest from Chicago, you're going to increasingly run into them. But I didn't have that experience. So I didn't have that. Like I said, hardware there, they were of no consequence in the 80s. When they became good, and the Bears, you know, the Bears had just been good for a while, even though they were disappointing in the playoffs. I was like, yeah, you know, that's a novelty. This mustard colored team is in the playoffs. And, you know, I didn't really, you know, I had nothing against Favre. He was, you know, whatever. But over time, it took root a little bit later for me, mainly because while they became dominant and the Bears and the wants that era were so awful, they would increasingly populate Soldier Field. And I got more of a sort of a firsthand look. So it just took a while to set in for me.
Yeah, they're a little much.
You grew up with it. So like you said, you dominated it in the 80s.
So it didn't bother me as a kid. I didn't even see them as a rival. They were just that team we always beat.
That's what I mean, right.
About the Niners and the Redskins.
Right, that's what I said. But like you still had people in your community that were, and you probably just looked down upon them with pity.
Questioned their intelligence.
Like if...
really? That's the team you root for? You have a choice and you pick them?
Right.
Growing up a Cub fan, think about questioning people's intelligence because they were rooting for a bad team.
And they really were.
There's a I can look up more of these before. The NFL Films put out, it's been a while now, maybe 20 years ago. They did like the history of, they picked certain teams. They did the Bears and the Raiders and the Packers and the Niners and anybody, the Cowboys, anybody, and Steelers, anybody who had a storied history. And they put together these DVD sets. And there's some great stories, great Halas Lombardi stories. And one of them is, at Lambeau, Lombardi is starting to give his pregame speech. He's starting to get the guys riled up. And he hears this, he can hear somebody banging on the door that wants to get in. So he stops the speech. Somebody opens the door. George Halas sticks his head in. And he goes, hey, coach, I just wanted to make sure that your guys are ready because we're going to kick your ass and slam the door. I don't know that they did, but I love the fact that Halas did that. I don't see Matt Nagy and Matt LaFleur.
Coaches are a little bit more vanilla, I guess, now.
But, you know, if you're Nagy right now, you should just pull out all the stops. That's exactly the kind of stuff you ought to be doing. Going in and busting into the, especially with COVID restrictions. Just bust into there. I'm sure nobody would frown upon that.
Many of us have herpes.